Mae Roberts Stage and Studio. We're listening to a song featured in El Muerto Vagabundo at Milagro Theater. It's a new Day of the Dead show about homelessness, currently running till November 6th. We'll meet Milagro Theater's new producing creative director, Roy Arroz, and artist in residence, Georgina Escobar, who conceived and directed their season opener. So stay tuned. Let's hear more of this music. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. With me in the KBOO studio are Milagro Theater's producing creative director, Roy Arroz. Hello, welcome.
Hello, Dee Mae. Thank you.
And playwright and director and artist in residence, Georgina Escobar. Welcome.
Hi, good morning.
Welcome both of you to Stage and Studio. Georgina, tell us about the song we just heard. How does it connect with the show?
Well, I came to the show with about 5 or 6 classic Mexican songs that I wanted to reinvent in the process of devising the show. And this particular one is a famous 1950s song, Mexican song by Chava Flores called El Gato Viudo. And I decided to reinvent it by just doing it simple strings and a whistle. And it played to the vagabundo very nicely, to the tramp, and it became sort of his theme. So it's a reoccurring theme that you hear as when people recognize that he comes in the scene, this whistling comes on.
Well, I want to hear more about the show itself, El Muerto Vagabundo. But first, actually, I just want to congratulate Roy here, Roy Arroz, on becoming the producing creative director for Milagro. How does this job, I'm just curious about the title, how does this job, differ from a producing artistic director?
Well, the main reason for the name difference is because we are not quite sure yet. Milagro is a varied organization culturally. We do a lot more than theater. We also have, like currently right now, we have an exhibit of artwork by Posada. We also have the altar exhibit. We have music. We have, you know, so we encourage a lot of different art forms, not just theater. And so I think that's where the creative comes into play, that where we're trying to figure out exactly what that means, that the scope is it's a little different than simply artistic director of a theater company.
Well, it sounds like it's on an expansive mode too, perhaps, to give it more, leeway for the future, right?
Yes, that's correct. Like I said, we're still
figuring it out
exactly
yeah.
what that means.
Well, that's great. I mean, Milagro has really grown a lot through the decades, so I'm sure that growth is going to continue. So I was just wondering, what made you want to, have you worked with Milagro before?
I had not. I had been working in Seattle doing theater in Seattle for about 14 years.
Yeah.
And I had my own theater company for the last 5 when I was in Seattle. And I found out about Milagro last year, probably about summer, late summer. And then through twists and turns of life, I found out about this job, and I was at a point in my life where I was looking to make a big change, and so
you wanted to make a big change from Seattle to Portland.
It was more a career change. I've been working corporate for a long time in advertising, and I decided to make a change, and here I am.
Interesting pathway there. Yeah. So yeah, we can talk more about that later. I think that Portlanders forget though that Milagro Theater has a great regional, if not national, reputation too. So had you heard of Milagro before you applied for the job?
Oh, I had most definitely heard about them, and I have tremendous respect for the work that Jose and Danielle have done at the theater. Everybody just recognizes it as a driving force of Latino theater in this country and in the region, but in the country as well. And so even, when I applied, I was like, oh, this is such a long shot. They're never going to look at me.
Well, you never know, right? Georgina, had you heard of Milagro before? Had you worked with Milagro before?
Yeah. Yes, to the prior. I had heard of Milagro. Mm-hmm. I'm part of a national coalition called the Latino Theater Commons. I'm one of the artists for that. And so we bring in artists, scholars, networkers, and we basically are talking about the movement of the Latino theater. So with that, Milagro obviously was mentioned as one of our allies. But I'm from New York, so I'm a little bit distanced to actually have worked with Milagro before. Jose actually went to a festival of new Latino plays where he got to see one of my original pieces, and that's how he plucked me out of there.
Interesting. Oh, that's fantastic. So, yeah, he was looking, scouting for new talent.
He was.
Found it, right?
Definitely.
Well, for its 33rd season, Milagro Theater chose the theme of home, and the season opening show is about people without housing, without homes. Roy, let's first talk about the theme of home, though. You know, why Milagro chose it for the season.
I think that with seasons, this was chosen before I started working here.
Yeah.
But a lot of times the themes with seasons come across as you're reading the plays. I don't think you go into planning a season and you decide, we're going to do a season about home. Let's find plays that relate to that. Instead, you look at the plays and you realize, oh, wait, this season has this through line. And that's how how do we then focus that season and how do we encourage it and bring attention to it.
So all the plays have some bearing on the theme of home.
They all do, yes.
Well, the opening show is Milagro's 21st Dia de Muertos production, and I'm really interested in the title itself, Georgina, the title of the new show and how it translates to English. Would you tell us?
Correct. I came here with the Milagro has not parameters. I call them beautiful creative challenges. The title was one of them. It was sort of given to me as a theme, you know, something that I needed to work with, then the issue of homelessness and also veterans, because it was all based on this article that Jose read. So I kept it, El Muerto Vagabundo, so that it could be our pillar and our through line. And it translates really to Death and the Tramp. That's how I translate it.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. It's actually, you know, the dead tramp. But if I were to do a full translation, you know, the poetic justice would be Death and the Tramp.
Oh, gosh, that's interesting. So the storyline does have to do with, I guess, a tramp.
Correct.
You know, right? So tell us about the storyline, because, you know, it's a fascinating story that starts off with a little kid.
Correct. We put the pieces together, like I said, with the music. And what I ended up weaving into a play was the story of a kid who doesn't want to forget the rituals of the Day of the Dead that come from his parents who are both dead. So he's an orphan. He lives with his sister. They are both at the brink of being homeless themselves because they can't afford rent, as it's a common thread here in the city. And so then he gives an offering, you know, to honor his father and his mother. And when no one responds, he, you know, puts his heart out there and the tramp is summoned, basically. And we find out later through the play that, you know, is the tramp his father? Is the tramp a specter?
Oh.
Is the tramp... Who is he? But in chasing him, you know,
there's a big mystery.
Correct. It's kind of like the kid, Charlie Chaplin, you know, in the sense of the kid chasing.
I was going to ask about that.
That was a beautiful thread as well.
Well, I'm Dimae Roberts. You're listening to Stage and Studio with my guests, Georgina Escobar and Roy Arauz, both from Milagro Theater and the current production of El Muerto Vagabundo, running till November 6th. And if you missed any of this interview so far, hear it online later today at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. So, Georgina, let's talk about how you devised and created El Muerto Vagabundo, because honestly, you only had 4.5 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's pretty darn impressive.
Thank you.
To do this, a new show in that short amount of time. It's enough to rehearse, you know, a scripted play.
Absolutely.
Right,
that's very astute. Yes. I started, like I said, with the music. That was my entry point. I mean, I had an article. I had the title. And I had these two
and
themes.
And you had the idea. Yeah.
Correct. And
yeah.
So there was these two themes. And I said, I think I have... And the idea is even... It was even foggy back then. It was more the music and trying to tie it into these themes. And then when I met the actors and saw what their strengths were, I spent a week really just trying to get to know them and see how I could direct them and what we could accomplish. And once I saw strong clowning skills, strong puppetry skills, then I started implementing those in our storytelling. I did go with the actors and show them basically my basic 8 points of storytelling or of playwriting and told them, this is what needs to happen here, this is what needs to happen here. And we sort of brainstormed together and said, oh, it would be nice if this happened. Oh, what about this? And some ideas trumped others. And then I took it home for a weekend and wrote an entire script.
And where did the idea of dealing, I guess, you know, with the theme of the unhoused, you know, come about? Because I don't know if you're both familiar with Portland, but right now Portland is going through, I think it's, I think one of its biggest, if not the biggest, housing crisis in years, with an unprecedented amount of people without homes and on the streets. How does this play tie into, if does it tie into that, I guess, more locally?
It does. I mean, the theme came from Milagro itself, because I think Milagro was very aware of what was happening. It was tough for me, or not even tough, it was just not realistic for me to do the research while I was in New York. So I waited until I came here to meet with people and to talk to them about these myths that surround homelessness. And that was my entry point, was like, how do we debunk these myths about people? And so you will see in the play, these characters are highly stylized. They're abstract versions of these themes, of these things like dementia and drug use and leisure and abuse and, you know, just these things. And they kind of treat with those myths by introducing us to their backstory so that we go, oh, that was just a person who had their entire family wiped out in front of them. You know, I'm not justifying drug addiction, but now I understand it. So there's just a little bit of these big themes that are encapsulated in each character, and then they give us their backstory so that we can humanize them a little bit more.
Well, what were some of the issues that you learned about that you wanted to bring out in this play?
The most important one, I think, for me was the idea that 75%, I believe it was a statistic that was given to me, 75% of homeless people in Portland have jobs. So it's not this idea of them not having jobs. It's this idea of economic disparity. Also, the idea of the housing crisis, you know, and in the Reagan years, closing down all the mental institutions at once just put so many people on the streets. And you'll see that is in the design as well. I put some of that institutional green as part of the set design to remind us that there was a huge collapse, you know, when those institutions were closed, and has led to an escalating issue. So it was more just tapping into these things that are perhaps a little distant, because, you know, in New York, we have obviously a lot of homeless as well, but we create a distance. We make them invisible. And I think this play talks about that, los olvidados, meaning the forgotten. The forgotten are like the dead. And so, but they're alive. So that's what the play tries to. And it's the kid, you know, the heart of an innocent child who doesn't see threat or judgment and just approaches them and asks them their story.
Well, it sounds like really somber material for, I mean, Day of the Dead shows are, of course, about the dead, you know, mm-hmm. but generally, at least at Milagro, it's been very joyous and celebratory. Mm-hmm. How have you brought that to this storyline? Because it does sound somber as you're talking about it.
Correct. I think that obviously the kid is a great entry point. The characters being big themes and being abstracted are comical. We have characters like the Pan, who represents this sort of Peter Pan innocence, and we have a character, we have the Tramp, who is our clown throughout the show. He's our Charlie Chaplin meets Cantinflas, you know. So he, at every time, hopefully if I did my job right, there's a very good balance. And I think I got that from a lot of the feedback, was that there was a good balance of, you know, joy and also somber or drama and comedy, you know.
For people who don't know who Cantinflas is, can you fill us in?
Oh, he was he's not the Chaplin of Mexico, because he's less about physical comedy. He's more about always talking in circles. So he is the ideal tramp of, not ideal, but the symbol of a tramp in Mexican culture, because even now when we go around in circles in our logic, we say we're cantinflando, because he would just talk in circles to purposefully confuse you. So he's what Charlie Chaplin was to physical comedy, he was to, in many ways, our poetic or our more literal.
Well, it sounds like there's a bittersweet quality, just as there is in Chaplin itself, right?
Right.
So in the show, what are some of the, I guess, the Day of the Dead traditions, though, that you are incorporating into the show?
The kid himself is in search of resurrecting those traditions. So in that, he draws us into finding out what those could be. And if you are of a distant generation, how can you resurrect them? How do you bring them back with what you have? And so we bring a lot of the altar building back. The lighting the candles is a huge part of it, because lighting a candle and sharing the darkness is part of it. They do have a beautiful scene where they share coffee with the audience. And
oh, really?
Yes, and they bring us in. And so it's all part incorporated in the play, but it's usually just the candles, the salt, the chalk.
And is there an offrande at the altar as well? Yeah.
They do. They build it collectively with what they have, right? With found objects, because that's what we're dealing with. They do bring out some of the colors as well. Some of the typical oranges are represented in their wardrobe. The kid wears the orange, which is very huge for Mexican Day of the Dead culture.
Well, and I was also wondering, Roy, what other activities, I guess, at Milagro, you mentioned the gallery exhibit, but there's usually an altar as well during Day of the Dead, too.
That's correct. So we have the community altar, which sits right outside of our cafe we call it the elbow room, just a little room that that connects the Zócalo with the rest of the facility. So that's our community altar, where we have people that mean a lot to Milagro who passed away, where we honor them. And also the community is welcome to bring, if you want to put a picture of somebody that you want to honor in the altar, you're welcome to add to it. If you want to put an ofrenda, you're more than welcome to bring that as well. And then that leads you to El Zócalo, where we have the altar exhibits by Pepe Moscoso. And then we also have the prints by Posada.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Which are on loan by the Mexican consulate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, these are a pretty big deal. They were celebrating his 100th anniversary of his birth. Mm-hmm.
Now, who is this again?
Posada. Okay. What's his first name?
José Guadalupe Posada. If you look at any image of La Catrina, they're featured in the show as well, La Catrina, which is the big feathered hatted woman and the top hatted man that are skeletons. He's the one that right. painted them. He's the one that gave them birth.
Beautiful. Did that affect your design as well?
It did. I mean, of all the Day of the Dead symbols, I wanted to bring in La Catrina and La Catrine because they were created in a way to mock the class system and saying everybody dies, no matter if you're rich or poor. And I thought it was very important for this show to bring in those characters. So they do show up, you know, that we do see the death in a moment. And it's La Catrina and El Catrín, which are supported by the prince as well.
Yeah, so rich.
So we have that exhibit of the prince and the four altars by Pepe Moscoso are also relate to the themes of the show, and clowning and Cantinflas is represented in one of them.
So much richness and depth in all of this. You know, as I said, 4.5 weeks doesn't seem like very long to create a new show. But you also have a lot of art disciplines in there. You know, there's music, there's dance, there's poetry and puppetry, I understand,
correct.
Too. I mean, that's a lot to, you know, when you were casting, did you kind of think, oh, this person can do puppets, maybe I can work with that? Is that part of the casting process?
I didn't cast it.
Well, then I guess it wasn't.
You came in
and you found out what skills people had.
Then. Right. You know those shows, like the cooking shows where you get the special box?
It's like an Iron Chef,
yeah,
right?
And you get the box and you got to make it work. Right, That's what happened.
Then. You were Iron Chef of playwriting. Yeah. There you go. Well, so you found out what people's skills were and then you worked it in?
Correct.
That seems like it makes sense to me.
Yeah,
you know?
It worked.
So tell me about some of the folks. I mean, I understand the young actor, Diego Delacio.
Delacio.
He plays the kid, the young kid, that he's pretty fantastic in this.
He's done a few theater camps, from what I believe, and he is very disciplined. His mother is an actress, so he is very trained. Somebody asked him the other day, how long have you been acting? And he said, ever since I was in my mother's stomach.
How old is he?
He's 11.
Well, that's 11 years,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. But the way he said it,
it was hilarious.
He's really astute. He's really sharp.
So they do pick up on things inside the womb, right?
Apparently.
Well, you know, I think, from what I hear, it's been really well received and well reviewed. Do you want to do a shout out for the other actors?
We have wonderful actors. We have beginners and experienced. My puppetry person that I was very happy to get was Carrie Ann Honeycutt. She's done puppetry around the city. She's also a costumer, so she loaned, you know, her eyes as well. We have Julio Vasquez. Oh boy,
Velasquez.
Julio Cesar Velasquez. Julio Cesar Velasquez is a beautiful person because he was homeless himself, and he came to the theater at one point, and then he came to the theater searching for a home. So the fact that he's doing this show under those circumstances, He's not anymore. He's settled now. But it's just so interesting because he was able to keep an honesty in the room for all of us and keep us all in check, you know, in a very beautiful way. He also has a great voice. We have Juliet Booty, who used to work at Milagro. We have Carlos Adrian Manzano, who I think this is his third show at Milagro, but it's his first year acting, and he's a rising star. We have Giovanni Alva, who also worked at Milagro.
Oh, yeah. I've seen Giovanni.
Yeah, and he does awesome. Improv, right? Yeah, correct? Right. And he's fantastic. And Patricia Alvitez, who is our dancer, and she also plays our Katrina and has been more than a joy to direct because she's just so open-hearted and beautiful. They're just all a really, really good cast. And Mariel Sierra, who plays the sister. And so we just created a tribe element because to me that was, again, the Iron Chef. You know, I was like, these elements have to play together and I'm going to leave pretty soon. And they need to feel that connection to each other, and they have. They've really bonded.
Well, this isn't your first time then devising a work.
No, it's
yeah.
not.
Yeah, so this is sort of a pathway to do that if people are listening and they want to, you know, yes. create a new work. I was wondering, what are you most proud of
from this show? From
yeah.
this show?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy. I think it was the fact that we were able to pull this off in four and a half weeks.
Honestly,
I really,
that is a short amount of time.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm a playwright by trade.
Yeah,
so
wow.
I was like, I can just come in with the script and say, devised, sort of, here it is. But I really wanted to get their instincts into the show because I knew they would own up to their roles in that way. They take ownership of the work that they've created. So I'm most proud of just the work that we've achieved together in 4.5 weeks, not only just in the script and the device, just from all the designers. They were just so kind. My props designer Emily was amazing, and Sarah, my costume designer, we had constant conversations. My lighting designer and I met outside of the theater just talking about the show. I think everybody was just very committed and very inspired, and I think that's what I'm the most proud of.
Well, Roy, having seen this show, what are your favorite scenes?
Oh, that is it's, you know, the whole show, this is the first time I'm in any way involved in a devised piece. And so everything, the way that they use light, there's a scene where all the lights come off. There's a scene where all the lights come off and they use just handheld lamps to light up the moment. And to me, that's just one of those magical moments. Mm-hmm. You stare and go, oh my gosh. And then, you know, it's hard to pick one, quite honestly. The altar building, you know, when everything just sort of comes together and the joy. One of the things that I love about the show, Georgina talked about it earlier, but, you know, it's very easy to fall into one thing and to make the show somber and sad, but the finding the comedy in everything. And so that's one of, you know, it's a very generic statement, but even when somebody is having a harsh moment, you know, somebody's having a very personal, deep moment, there's always either followed or in there, you can see that it's life. And there's moments of not comedy per se, but of levity.
Levity, yeah.
And so that is, you know, things that I truly, truly enjoy about the show.
Well, I think you need both. You know, if it's a comedy, you need some drama. If it's a drama, you need some light moments, right?
And
so it's good to have the combination.
And it would be very easy, I think, for someone to do a show about the homeless and keep it very dark,
mm-hmm.
or patronizing, and it's not. It really isn't. That's what I love about the show.
That sounds fantastic. Milagro Theater presents its 21st annual Dia de Muertos production of El Muerto Vagabundo, created and conceived and directed by Georgina Escobar. The show runs through November 6th, Thursday through Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. All shows are at Milagro. That's located at 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. For tickets and info, visit milagro.org or call 503-236-7253. 236-7253. And there are discounts for students, seniors, veterans, groups of 15 or more, and with the Oregon Trail card through the Arts for All program as well. Now, you can find all that info plus photos and links and the podcast of the show later today at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. And Georgina, just in the, you know, the final few moments here, has it been like being an artist in residence at Milagro? It's been great, I know, but
yeah.
You know, what for you personally though, you know, as far as an artist, how's it been?
Well, this is the first project. I have another one in December, and so I come back in December. I think it's very important as an artist, especially working in New York, to have the ability to spend 4.5 weeks in a rehearsal room. You know, we don't have that luxury in New York unless we are produced by a bigger house or we are self-produced, and that means 4.5 weeks of paying rent somewhere. Sustainability in the arts in New York is incredibly hard. I am lucky because I'm a working writer, but I'm not a working director. And so to be able to be in the rehearsal room for 4.5 weeks and whatever else, 4.5 next in December, is just a luxury that I had taken for granted, and I didn't realize that I missed it until I stopped doing it in New York.
Well, you mentioned you're going to have another show at Milagro. What is it?
It's called El Payaso. It is not written by me. It's written by Emilio Rodriguez, who is also an artist in residence. He has two shows in the next season, and I am directing it, and it's their bilingual touring show. I believe it's for not young audiences per se, but it's for college, high school and college students. They travel around the world, and
okay.
I get to
And
direct
you're directing it?
Correct.
So how is it different between being the director versus artist in residence?
I think the artist in residence, just for, if I'm not mistaken, means that they've invited an artist to come back for more than one project.
Okay.
I think that's what it means.
So you got two.
Right,
Yay.
Exactly.
Okay, excellent. Well, Roy, I don't know if we have, you know, in 1 minute, can you tell us what the next few plays are?
Sure. We have coming up after El Payaso, which is our touring company, Swimming While Drowning, which is by Emilio Rodriguez as well, which is, and then we have Lydia by, oh my God, I just forgot his name.
Octavio Solis.
By Octavio Solis. And then we have our very we're closing the season with a Spanish musical called Oye Oya, which we are writing. It's a brand new musical, all in Spanish, based on The Tempest.
Oh, it sounds fantastic. Well, we'll talk to you more, I'm sure, you know, as the season progresses. Roy Araúz and Georgina Escobar, thank you so much for joining
me
today.
Thank you.
And looking forward to the rest of, you know, the season as well as your show, Georgina. El Muerto Vagabundo, find out more at milagro.org. And you can also go to stageandstudio.org for more info. Before we go today, Hold These Truths, a play inspired by the life of civil rights hero Gordon Hirabayashi, challenged the U.S. government. He publicly fought the government's orders to forcibly remove and mass incarcerate all people of Japanese ancestry on the West Coast during World War II. The play is about Gordon's fight and struggles until he wins the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Hold These Truths at Portland Center Stage. It's a great production running now through November 13th. All shows are at PCS, and that's located at the Armory at 128 Northwest 11th Avenue. You can actually find out more about the show at PCS.org. That's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to engineer Steve Nasser. You can hear the podcast of the show at stageandstudio.org, kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts. So you know you